Welcome. My name is Nancy Porter, and it is my pleasure to share articles from the February 10th, 2025 issue of Time Magazine. I need to remind you that you are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. I am turning first to the section titled The Brief, and the name of the title of the article is it's the brief opener, and I guess it has a title somewhere. The Price of Disasters. It does not cite an author for this article. Maybe it does, by Alana Samuels. The insurance market in California sends warning signals nationally. Insurance companies were worried about the Pacific Palisades neighborhood of Los Angeles long before devastating wildfires burned through the area, ravaging homes and forcing evacuations. The Palisades, because of its location next to the brush-heavy Santa Monica Mountains, was too vulnerable to fires to insure at permissible rates without losing money. Insurers, including State Farm, which dropped nearly 70% of policyholders in Pacific Palisades in July of 2024, refused to offer new insurance plans or renew any old ones. As a result, many homeowners were forced to obtain coverage from the state's insurer of last resort, the California Fair Access to Insurance Requirements, CA Fair plan, which covered 1,430 homeowners in the Pacific Palisades zip codes of 90272 in September 2024, an 85% increase from 2023. The fair plan insures home against fire, but has higher premiums than traditional insurance and only covers up to $3 million in damages for residential property. Like many other insurers of last resort in the 33 other states with this type of system, the California Fair Plan is buckling under the weight of natural disasters worsened by climate change. I'm concerned that we're one bad fire season away from complete insolvency, said Jim Wood, then a California assemblyman, at a March 2024 hearing in which California Fair Plan President Victoria Roach explained that it had just $200 million of cash on hand, with $450 billion of exposure in the state. That bad fire season is now here. As infernos burned across Los Angeles County, torching at least 40,000 acres, analysts at CoreLogic, a risk modeling company, estimated losses could reach $45 billion. It is a blow to the hundreds of insurers operating in California, but a particular challenge for the state's insurer of last resort. Its predicament highlights the precarity of the home insurance market in California and nationally. Because of an increased risk of fires, floods and hurricanes, and other natural disasters, it doesn't make financial sense for insurers to offer plans to some people. In the long term, we're not doing enough to deal with the underlying driver, which is fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions. So we're going to continue to see insurance unavailability, says Dave Jones, the former insurance commissioner of California, and now director of the Climate Risk Initiative at the University of California at the Berkeley School of Law. We are marching steadily toward an uninsurable future in this country. As insurers drop policyholders, homeowners turn to insurers of last resort, sometimes called beach and windstorm plans, that can't really afford to insure them either. Yet more states are creating these plans to bolster private property insurance markets. Nationwide, the number of fair plan insurance policies nearly doubled from 2018 to 2023, rising to 2.7 million, according to data from AM Best, a company that rates the financial strength of insurers. The California FAIR Plan alone saw its exposure grow ninefold over the past 6 years. The fate of the California FAIR Plan affects everyone in the nation's most populous state. Insurers are responsible for covering the first $1 billion of claims in California. But then the responsibility goes to all insurance policyholders in the state, who are responsible for additional assessed charges. Essentially, everyone has to pay to reimburse people whose homes lie in high-risk areas. Florida is a case in point. When Citizens, the state-run insurer of last resort, could not pay out claims, policyholders paid the bill, which added up to a hurricane tax of hundreds of dollars per household after Hurricane Ian hit near Cape Canaveral in 2022. The way FAIR plans work is really a symptom of the broader insurance market failing, says David Marlette, managing director of the Brantley Risk and Insurance Center at Appalachian State University. In some ways, it's useful for people to be priced out. The insurance market is one way of signaling where people should not live. More expensive plans may divert people from high-risk areas. But as the insurance march becomes workable in wider swaths of the country, FAIR plans will not be a tenable solution. We need to dramatically rethink how homeowners insurance works and what it covers, he says. One potential fix would be for the federal government to offer to provide insurance, called reinsurance, for FAIR plans, essentially backstopping them if they don't have enough money to pay out claims, says Jones, the former insurance commissioner. That would also help FAIR plans save money on buying insurance from the private markets. Jones also suggests creating an Obamacare style marketplace for home insurance, where the government could subsidize low or moderate income households trying to buy insurance. What won't work, experts say, is continuing with the same system and hoping that climate risk just goes away. Insurers are not magicians, Jones says. The risks of loss are rising through climate change, and insurers can't just wave a magic wand and make them go away. All right, moving on now to the next news article in the brief section is about the world of money. Headline, The Problem with Medical Credit Cards by Alana Samuel. David Zhao signed up for a medical credit card while supine in a dentist's chair. In December 2018, the consumer lawyer from Los Angeles went for a routine appointment at Western Dental in San Mateo in the suburbs of San Francisco. Zhao was told by the dentist that his gums were receding. He needed a special mouth guard or he would have to have surgery, he recalls being told. Zhao that says he asked if the mouth guard was covered by insurance and that office staff said most of the cost was not. Instead, Zhao says, he was told he could sign up for a payment plan used by many of Western Dental's patients. As he lay in the chair, Zhao recalled, an assistant came over with a clipboard and a document for him to initial. Zhao normally would have read each page of the document closely, scrutinizing the terms, but he had fluoride trays in his mouth and was stressed about his gum condition. In hindsight, it was duress, he says. After the appointment was over, he recalled, a Western Dental employee gave him a gift bag and escorted him out of the office. 3 weeks later, Zhao got a bill from Synchrony Bank, which owns CareCredit, the largest medical credit card company in the United States. It was for $1,200. Among the charges on the statement, which was reviewed by Time magazine, were $425 for a mold made of his mouth and $290 were the contents of the gift bag, which included an expensive mechanical toothbrush Zhao said he had not asked for. But that was just the first surprise. Though the dentist's office had told Zhao he was signing up for a payment plan with no interest, he says, in fact, he had signed up for what's known as a deferred interest credit card, which charges no interest on payments during a promotional period, but imposes hefty fees on top of the original payments if the user does not pay off the entire balance within that promotional time. Zhao said he had to take out a chunk of his savings to pay off the card so he would not be charged 26.99% in deferred interest. I never want to have anything to do with the dentist ever again, Zhao says. Western Dental said that it had no history of any complaints with Zhao's account and that it could not comment further. Synchrony Bank said it could not comment specifically on Zhao's case, but said in a statement that its financing solutions are transparent and clear, and that it has saved car holders billions of dollars in interest over the years. Zhao's experience is not just the story of a bad encounter with a medical provider. It highlights the way medical credit cards are increasingly pushed on patients across America as the costs of health, dental, and veterinary procedures continue to rise. CareCredit had 12 million cardholders and 270,000 participating providers in 2024. Up from 4.4 million cardholders and 177,000 participating providers a decade prior, according to a May 2023 report by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The growing promotion and use of medical cards and installment loans, the CFPB wrote, can increase the financial burden on patients who may pay more than they otherwise would pay and may compromise medical outcomes. Revenue for the medical patient financing industry was $15.3 billion in 2023, according to a report by the research firm IBISWorld, which found that as healthcare becomes less affordable because of rising premiums and insurance gaps, more patients are turning to medical loans or installment plans. Medical credit cards may seem like a boon to both patients and providers. Doctors' offices can get paid up front without needing to chase down clients for billing or insurance reimbursement, while customers can get approved on the spot to finance procedures they might not otherwise be able to afford. The deferred interest component, which touts zero interest loans during the promotional window, may also appeal to customers at a moment when interest rates are high. But some cards can come with startling terms and hidden costs, consumer advocates say. Consumers who don't make a minimum payment each month and pay off the entire balance of their card during the promotional period are charged all the interest that would have accrued since the original purchase date at rates that can top 30%. CareCredit is the subject of a lawsuit seeking class action status that was filed in New York in August of 2024. It argues the card's interest rate, 32.99% in May of 2024, violates state usury laws, which cap interest rates on low payments. Synchrony told Time it could not comment about that lawsuit. I don't think people understand what they're signing up for, says Elizabeth Benjamin, managing director of the Community Service Society of New York, a nonprofit research and advocacy group for people facing economic insecurity. There are people who sign up for these care credit programs who don't even have $500 in savings. There is a large question of whether problems with deferred interest credit cards should be blamed on the card companies themselves or on providers who allegedly mislead customers about what they're actually signing up for. Benjamin and other consumer advocates say that unscrupulous doctors, dentists, and veterinarians sometimes push consumers into signing up for medical credit cards, even when their insurance or Medicaid will cover the procedure, or when they could potentially get financial assistance from nonprofit hospitals. Some providers sign patients up without properly explaining how deferred interest works, or making it clear that people are signing up for a credit card at all, says Joy Doctor, senior attorney at Western Center on Law and Poverty, which provides advocacy services in California. In such cases, Doctor says, it's the providers, not the product they're pushing, that is the primary culprit. Still, Doctor says, the medical credit card providers make it so easy for them to be bad actors. Care Credit said in a statement to Time magazine that all of its 270,000 participating providers must pass a training program that teaches providers how to explain that the product is a credit card and to refer patients to disclosures about how the product works. Care Credit says that 80% of its cardholders pay off their balance before the promotional period ends, meaning they pay zero interest. For more than 35 years, Care Credit has offered convenient and transparent financing options that make health and wellness products and services more accessible for consumers, the company said in its statement. Yet, even if most Care Credit customers understand the deferred interest promotion and pay off balances before the promotional period ends, the company is making significant money on those who don't. The most recent public earnings report issued by Synchrony Bank states that the company's health and wellness products, of which Care Credit is the largest, earned $956 million from interest and fees on loans in the third quarter of 2024, a 13% jump from the same period the previous year. Medical credit cards with deferred interest often end up hurting people with lower credit scores, according to the CFPB. People with credit scores below 619 accrued interest on about one-third of deferred interest healthcare purchases, according to the Bureau, meaning that those customers were not able to pay off their cards before the promotional period ended. As a result, many wound up deeper in debt. Eventually, as consumers miss too many payments, their credit score will be affected. If their debt grows big enough, credit card companies often sue them over the debt. And debt collection lawsuits often end up with a judgment in favor of the card issuers, allowing the credit card company to garnish the customer's wages, assuming there are some. Then there have been some attempts to more closely regulate medical credit cards. The CFPB said last year that it was planning to monitor how financial institutions market their products to healthcare providers, looking especially at whether financial institutions are putting borrowers at risk. A California law that went into effect in 2020 requires the patient, not the provider, to fill out the application and prohibits them from doing so while doing under anesthesia. A bill passed in Illinois in August of 2024 prohibits dentists and their staff from completing customers' applications for third-party lines of credit and bans dentists' offices from signing patients up for third-party credit cards with deferred interest provisions. I wanted to make sure that if you're going forward with a deferred interest credit card, says Margaret Croak, the Illinois state representative who sponsored the bill, you know exactly what you are signing up for. Moving now to the section on politics. We are now on page 38 of the Time, February 10th, 2025 issue. This is an essay written by Adam Chandler. Headline, The Myth That Broke America. How a national story about opportunity created a civic crisis. When President Trump delivered his second inaugural address, he preserved a tradition of myth-making that has only served Americans poorly. Beyond the expected theatrics, Trump declared the United States to be, quote, history's greatest civilization, unquote, despite its future as the most unequal nation with the lowest life expectancy, even just among Western democracies of today. And despite his record thin margin of victory in November's election, the president claimed, quote, the entire nation is rapidly unifying behind our agenda, unquote. What's actually noteworthy about this moment, however, is a rare current of agreement among Americans. The consensus comes in the form of a deep pessimism about our most cherished national story. One recent poll of American voters conducted by WS/NORC found that only 36% still believe in an American dream, broadly defined by the idea that hard work begets success and upward mobility. This finding represents a big tumble downward from 2012, when, even in the shadow of the Great Recession, 52% of Americans still held fast to that story. Historically, to be American, for some at least, meant the chance to live free of class status and feudal baggage. Even before the term was coined, an American dream of being socially mobile by means of hard work dusted industriousness with a special merit-driven magic that had seduced and frustrated millions. From the pilgrims and founding fathers through the frontier and all the way to today's hustle culture, gig economy, and ragged safety nets, the essential American folktale has plated hard work with destiny, self-reliance with self-actualization, and success with moral work. But while the narrative around opportunity has largely remained fixed, the American experience has degraded from one of bootstrapping to one of white-knuckling. Over the past 45 years, the U.S. economy has doubled in size, and American workers have grown 81% more productive, while their wages have grown only 29%, according to the Economic Policy Institute. Workers of color and workers without college degrees have seen their real wages actually decline. Today, medical debt is the biggest cause of bankruptcy in America, and baby formula is one of the most shoplifted items. According to a Brookings Institution study, 44% of Americans work jobs that qualify as low wage. These are some of the faith-shredding headwinds that made arguments about preserving democracy fall flat for people already failed by a democracy where hard work does not pay off. They are the same winds that have rustled Trump back into power. And we're learning again, from the Capitol Rotunda to Southern California, winds can very easily carry fires. This was adapted from Chandler's 99 Perspiration, a new working history of the American way of life. Moving now. The next article is titled Against the Odds. The law professor who took on big tobacco has set his sights on sports betting. This was written by Sean Gregory in Boston. On a balmy December morning in Boston, Richard Daynard is sitting at his dining room table watching a live stream on his laptop. The hearing has been called to discuss what seems to be becoming America's new favorite pastime, throwing down bets on sports 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And what has set the bearded, bookish law professor off is a former gambling regulator from New Jersey's use of a talking point favored by both the industry and the professional sports leagues, that the reason it's so easy to wager on sports these days is this is what the American people want. To Daynard, president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University's Law School, such language deflects from gambling's heavy social toll. This is consumer choice, says Daynard, the sarcasm driving home his point. This is freedom. Daynard has been fighting big public health battles for decades. He played a foundational role building landmark legal cases in the 1980s and 90s against U.S. tobacco companies, which ultimately resulted in cigarette manufacturers agreeing to pay more than $200 billion in settlement funds to the states. Now, at age 81, he's no less indignant about the way companies seem to put profits over customer well-being. His latest objective is curtailing the excesses of sports gambling. We're talking, says Daynard, about addiction. Americans bet an estimated $150 billion on sports in 2024, up 24% from the prior year, according to the American Gaming Association, and sports books kept some $14 billion of that, up 27%. State governments collected about $2.5 billion in sports betting tax revenue in 2024, which was a 19% jump. Networks broadcast incessant advertising, featuring premium pitchmen like Kevin Hart, LeBron James, Peyton Manning, and Jamie Foxx, from gambling companies like DraftKings, FanDuel, and BetMGM. But America's burgeoning love affair with sports gambling has come with costs. Calls to problem gambling hotlines have spiked. Emerging research suggests that sports betting depletes investment accounts of already financially vulnerable households, increases bankruptcy risk, and even contributes to upticks in intimate partner violence. I am presently, or have recently been, treating divorces, breakups, estrangement from children, criminal charges, incarcerations, loss of all savings, foreclosure of homes, end of careers, suicide ideation, hospitalization for a suicide attempt, says PHAI Director of Gaming Policy, Carrie Levant, a former gambling addict who is now a clinical gambling disorder therapist and also testified at that December congressional hearing. The deepest forms of despair. Daynard argues that sports betting operators, much like tobacco companies, have engineered their product to foster addiction. Through the constant stream of bonuses, promotions, and opportunities to micro-bet on the speed of the next pitch, on the rebound totals of a particular player, on who will score the next touchdown. On your phone, during a sporting event. You're just pushing buttons, says Daynard. You're just going after action. His approach to reining in the industry is twofold, litigation and legislation. In late 2023, PHAI filed a class action lawsuit on behalf of customers in Massachusetts, accusing DraftKings, one of the biggest gambling operators in the United States, of utilizing deceptive marketing practices. Last summer, a judge denied DraftKings' motion to dismiss the case, allowing it to potentially advance to the discovery phase. Daynard's team also helped Representative Paul Tonko, a New York Democrat, draft the Safe Bet Act, a federal law that would ban sports gambling advertising during live events, prohibit gambling operators from accepting more than five deposits from an individual in a 24-hour period, and eliminate the use of artificial intelligence to track a bettor's gambling habits for customized promotions. Nobody has had more experience with fighting addiction as a scholar and activist and thought leader, said Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Connecticut Democrat who, as state attorney general in the 1990s, worked with Daynard to file lawsuits against tobacco companies and introduce the Safe Bet Act with Tonko. He was a very powerfully articulate advocate at a time when there were not a lot of them, making our lawsuit credible. Daynard is not a sports fan. He almost never gambles. He's placed a few wagers at the horse track over the years, bought a lottery ticket once when the jackpot was a gazillion dollars, and while on a Caribbean cruise with Carol, bet on some 50 bucks in the casino. He ultimately came out $5 ahead. But Daynard can pinpoint exactly when sports gambling hit his radar. March 10th, 2023, the day mobile betting commenced in Massachusetts. Just as smoke enveloped the back room of Forrester's Bar and Grill during Daynard's ham radio confab, sports gambling advertisements blanketed even the trash cans of Boston. The betting business doesn't traffic in subtlety. Sports gambling ads are everywhere. Heck, I even saw a DraftKings infomercial on AMC one recent morning. AMC? It's somewhat hard to fathom that just about a dozen years ago, the major U.S. professional sports league sued to stop New Jersey's effort to legalize sports betting, citing a 1992 federal law, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, that essentially prohibited sports betting outside of Nevada. The Supreme Court, however, in 2018, overturned that on states' rights grounds. Since then, 38 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized sports betting. Mobile betting is permitted in all but 8 of those jurisdictions. Missouri voters approved sports betting in November, and gambling should go live there sometime in 2025. Pro sports leagues that had nominally been trying to stop gambling went all in. This embrace makes business sense. Gambling increases product engagement. If you bet on baseball, you're much more likely to consume baseball. Plus, gambling creates new direct revenue streams for the leagues, which can sell their real-time data to the companies, which in turn can create live in-game betting opportunities. Still, says sports gambling researcher John Holden, a professor in Indiana University's Kelly School of Business, the buy-in from the leagues exceeded many people's wildest imaginations. Such robust championing of betting contributes to the downsides researchers have documented. More than a decade ago, gambling disorders was classified as the first non-substance behavioral addiction in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. A paper presented at a finance conference in October titled Gambling Away Stability, Sports Betting Impact on Vulnerable Households, found that sports betting legalization led to depletion of investment accounts while also increasing credit card debt and the frequency in overdrafts for financially constrained households. Mark Johnson, a finance professor at BYU and one of the study's co-authors, anticipated that sports gambling would replace other forms of entertainment. That's not happening, says Johnson. Instead, people are taking money that they had allocated for investments in order to fund betting. It's very concerning. Another October 2024 working paper, this one from researchers at UCLA and USC, estimates that online sports betting legalization has led to roughly 30,000 additional bankruptcies and $8 billion in annual debt collections. A third paper from last year from economics doctoral students at the University of Oregon found that an NFL home team upset loss in states with legalized sports gambling is more than twice as likely to lead to an incident of intimate partner violence compared with states without legalized gambling. Despite such alarming findings, Daynard is not out to ban sports gambling. He also never aimed to stop smoking altogether. What he wants to change is the approach to policing the market. The industry touts the responsible gaming model, in which companies include problem gambling hotline numbers in their ads, much as labels are affixed to cigarette packages now. You were warned, we're offering help, so don't blame us for your problems. A public health strategy, on the other hand, recognizes that the product can be addictive and enacts reasonable measures to protect consumers. PHAI's lawsuit against DraftKings alleges that the company's offer to get a $1,000 deposit bonus on the sign-up page of its mobile app and a similar offer on its website tricked Massachusetts customers who were new to sports betting into funding new accounts and engaging with a known addictive product. Unbeknownst to them, the suit alleges, customers would receive a $1,000 bonus only if they deposited $5,000 up front, bet $25,000 within 90 days, and bet that money on games in which you had at least a 25% chance of losing your skin. And even if someone fulfilled those requirements, which were, according to the suit, spelled out in unreadable small print, the $1,000 wasn't a cash bonus. It was a credit to be used for more gambling. The old dope peddler actually hands over the stuff, says Daynard. These guys can't hand over, to use a technical term, the F-U-C-K-I-N-G, $1,000. They just hook somebody. But they can't give you $1,000. In its argument for dismissal, DraftKings contended that the promotion was not misleading and wrote that, quote, no reasonable consumer would believe that a deposit of any amount would result in the immediate transfer to them of $1,000, end quote. The company also claimed the plaintiffs failed to specify any financial harm caused by the promotion, as not receiving an expected bonus is not the same as losing money. Massachusetts Superior Court Judge Deborah Squires Lee, however, wrote that the extent of any DraftKings deception must be developed in discovery, and the plaintiffs plausibly suggest that they were harmed because they bought into a service worth less than they believed. As in most class actions, legal experts say the odds seem stacked against the plaintiff. But the fact that this case has survived that motion to dismiss is fairly significant, says Holden. That doesn't spell victory automatically, but it is a signal that, hey, this isn't a nothing. If the case does proceed to trial, experts say, a jury could be turned off by the way DraftKings marketed its promotion offer to novice customers. The lawsuit does a good job of saying, of course you put it in your terms and conditions, but you don't emphasize that, says Keith Miller, a professor at Drake Law School. You don't emphasize how much people have to deposit, what the playthrough is. Those sorts of things are the hardest for them to defend. Massachusetts, as the Massachusetts suit progresses, lawyers in other states will file similar claims just as they did in the tobacco wars. It's already happening. In September, a suit similar to PHIA's action was filed in New York. So far in 2025, DraftKings has been hit with lawsuits in New Jersey, Illinois, and Kentucky concerning its no-sweat and risk-free bet promotions. Meanwhile, the Safe Bet Act, which would also ban bonus and no-sweat advertising, require that operators conduct customer affordability checks for wagers in excess of $1,000 in a 24-hour period or $10,000 in a 10-day period, and prohibit operators from accepting deposits via credit card, is also an underdog. After all, two Democrats are pushing for regulations in a Republican-controlled Congress. I'm very clear-eyed that it will be an uphill fight, says Blumenthal. It will depend a lot on whether any of my Republican colleagues want to stand up to the industry and produce some decent reforms. His Democratic colleagues, moreover, don't count as no sweat bets. The power of the industry affects legislators on a bipartisan basis, says Blumenthal. To be very blunt, it's not like Democrats are immune to campaign contributions and other forms of influence. Through it all, Daynard, who's well past retirement age, plans to keep fighting. One of the great upsides of being older is you've seen a lot of things, he says, and you can recognize them. So you see something, you say, aha, Baynard snaps his fingers. What's similar with the tobacco industry is that they've designed the trap. The customers are in there, and they extract whatever money they can from them. And what happens with a trapped customer? Nothing good. And that will conclude our coverage from the February 10th, 2025 issue of Time Magazines. I need to remind you again that you have been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, my name is Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share Time Magazine with you.